Welcome to the Compose Like a Girl podcast. I'm your founder, host, and composer, Jocelyn Hagen. My Compose Like a Girl initiative amplifies female-identifying composers, helps conductors diversify their concerts, and works toward more equality in music programming and commissioning. I've been sitting down for conversations with some amazing composers, and I want to invite you into these deeper explorations of art and life. I hope you leave with some inspiration, just as I did. On today's episode, I'm sharing a recent conversation I had with Chen Yi. I can't remember the first time I heard of Chen Yi or her music, definitely early on. Her music has been well celebrated since the 90s, and for good reason. Her work blends both Chinese and Western traditions. Dr. Chen shared a great deal about her training and experience in China, which was illuminating and gave me insight on the Chinese and Western approaches to music making, as well as her extraordinary dedication to her composition students. If you want to hear the full interview with Dr. Chen, become a supporter by joining our Compose Like a Girl initiative on Patreon. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy. It's so good to talk to you, Dr. Chen. I wanted to start our conversation with the words of Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Jennifer Higdon. She says, "Chen Yi's music is a great combination of Western and Eastern art music. Her sound world reflects her native China, while also carrying the emotional heft of having emerged from the Cultural Revolution with determination to celebrate freedom and joy of making art. When you talk with her, she has great joy, but she is very serious about everything pertaining to music." Had you heard that quote before?
No, it's the first time I heard anything from Jennifer talking about me.
Well, I think it's all a great compliment to you and your work. I've been spending a lot of time listening to your music this past week in preparation for this interview. And yeah, this combination of Western and Eastern art music, it feels very natural and organic. And I'm wondering if that came naturally, or if that was something that you had to figure out and had to work on.
That is a great question. I came from China, and I grew up with classical music, like which is Western. Like I started learning piano from 3 and violin from 4 years old, and all classical repertoire. I was sent to countryside to work as a farmer during the Cultural Revolution.
A quick note here for our listeners. For those less familiar with the Cultural Revolution, it was a socio-political movement in the People's Republic of China, led by Mao Zedong, from the mid-1960s to the mid-1970s, with the goal of preserving communism by destroying remaining capitalist and traditional elements from Chinese society.
And that's the time I started to get in touch with common people, more and more like poor people, working people in the country. And also I found out that the Western music language actually is different from very touch ground kind of farmer's language. From that on, I started to do research on Chinese traditional music. And also, I worked in a Peking Opera Orchestra as a concertmaster for 8 years. From that working experience, I also learned a lot of, very Chinese-style traditional musical language. Besides the systematic training in the conservatory, which is much later, because after the Cultural Revolution, I was already 25. I went into the conservatory to study composition as a freshman to Beijing, which is like a 2,000 miles away from my hometown. So I learned the systematic classical music composition, as well as the training of traditional Chinese music. I thought that this was a combination, because in the conservatory in China, it was a required course which goes through different semesters. It helps me to organize what I had learned during the Cultural Revolution, and also during the time before I could be able to go to the conservatory to study composition officially. Because why I said officially, because when I was a farmer, I also brought my violin to the countryside. Some spare time, I would play my violin. But it's improvisational, because only revolutionary songs were allowed to play by then. Without criticism, if I play the Western repertoire, I would be criticized. I may be taken away. So I would play Western repertoire secretly with a heavy mute. But in public, when I play those songs, I may add the double stops. I would add all these Paganini techniques, for example, as improvisations, in order to keep my fingers moving. I guess that became the first lesson of my composition, I guess.
That's really interesting that it was forced improvisation, essentially. Yeah. To combine the two. I also read that you slept with your violin.
Yes, you know, because the violin case is small. Mm-hmm.
So we were on this virtual panel together at the beginning of the pandemic, and you said that you had a lot of students and that you worked really hard on giving them the feedback that they needed and all of that. And I thought that was very admirable. How many students do you think you've had now?
That is a good question, because we have four composition teachers here. We rotate our students. So I always have 18 students in hand.
Wow. And I think you also mentioned that you had been back to China to teach composition a bit as well.
Oh, yes. I was visiting professor in Beijing Central Conservatory and also Tianjin Conservatory. But those periods, terms ended. Because when you became a visiting professor, is a term like they fix the years, like 3 years as a distinguished visiting professor, or 3 years term, and then they extended for 2 years, and then we established a Beijing International Composition Workshop, which would bring in international young composers to write for mixed ensembles, including Chinese traditional instruments.
I remember one of the things you said in the panel was that there was a large number of women composers that were part of that program.
Yes, and not only that program. One time I brought my colleague to Taiwan to teach in a Taiwan Symphony's composition workshop. Among 33 fellows, only one man.
So I feel like it's just completely reversed from how it is here often. So why do you think that is?
Oh, maybe the culture also, music. Like in Korea, also you can see a lot of women studying music. I thought that is pretty common, pretty normal. I visited Seoul and I taught in the university like a guest. I also saw the whole classroom women composers.
Oh, I love it. It would just be so wonderful to see that here in the States as well. I think the energy in the room would be quite different.
Oh, by the way, UMKC has a very strong women's council, which supports women students, particularly graduate students, to have their projects funded. And also our band conductors, when they are women musicians, they could apply for commissioning one of our women composers to write for them and to premiere. And you see what they did? They even connected all these conductors from different universities to form a consortium to perform our students, women composers, new works. I thought that it is a very good support in our society.
Yes. Oh, I love it. I feel like there should be more initiatives like that. I find that composition can be a difficult thing to teach. I was wondering if you had a teaching philosophy.
And what we do in UMKC is to encourage everybody to discover, also to find their own voice and how. And we, besides giving lectures as ourselves or a guest, and we also ask everybody to give their own lecture, their talk, to talk about their own background. And I thought that could be helpful for them to find out what's their own voice, what they like. Some may be very intellectual-like, but we are quite open because in our program, we have some people who are very atonal, but most of them are not. And also we have pop music, we have electronic music, we have improvisational people as well, combined with electronic music. That's why we created a lot of opportunities for them to have during the school years.
That's an amazing amount of opportunities for young composers. And I feel like so many other programs probably pale in comparison to all of that, which is just really, really neat. I listened to a bit of your Chanticleer commissions recently. And the other one that I really enjoyed was I Hear the Sirens Call, which used the Chinese nonsense syllables, which I thought was really neat.
Thank you.
But it also said in the note, you know, for sale, is that these syllables were used to portray a mythological drama. What exactly did you mean by that?
Because as I told you, we learn all these folk songs. And the folk songs would come from different regions and with different texts, different lyrics. And when people from local, they would identify those syllables, and they would tell which culture they came from, or which minority groups would have those syllables. But in my case, because I also learn a lot of jazz syllables, because my students sing that a lot. Mm-hmm. And also when I went to education program in Bay Area, I also saw all these students singing guided by their teachers, like public school choral teachers. They are really creative. They also combine with jazz elements as well. I combine all this into my vocal writing. And so some of them, even with ancient poems as the lyric, right? Mm-hmm. I still added a lot of nonsense syllables, not only to add the flavor of the language and the styles, but also as a part of the melodic making. So that is also borrowed from Chinese musical storytelling, because that is not only one syllable with one pitch, but you have lingering long phrases after you sing the last character of the phrase. You have all this melodic making. And you can tell from the pieces I wrote for Chanticleer, and particularly in the CD Colors of Love, you may see that they took two movements from my Tang poems. Tang means the Tang Dynasty. I wrote them a set with four poems in this piece. The two pieces in the CD, we won Grammy, right, in 1999. It was the best small ensemble performance, including all contemporary pieces written by living composers on that CD. That's the first Grammy of Chanticleer.
That's awesome. Because you're a violinist, your string writing is just beautiful, and very idiomatic and virtuosic. Another one of the recordings that I fell in love with this last week is one for violin and piano, The Fisherman's Song.
Thank you.
that is my freshman piece.
What do you mean by freshman piece?
I mean, when I was the first year in the conservatory, like a freshman.
It feels very honest and emotional. And I wonder if there's something to that, that when we're young and before we know a lot of the world or even, you know, more, that there's something really beautiful in that naivety. And I think that really shines through in that piece.
You are right. It was because we set the freshman year homework. So that means I haven't done too much research systematically. Also, I haven't memorized all these folk songs covering the whole country yet.
Yeah,
you are right. And that is the style taken from my home city, like a hometown from the south. I was born in Canton near Hong Kong. So that is the style from the south. And it came to my mind also very naturally because I didn't have to think too much. It came out naturally.
Well, I think there's something special in that too, because I can feel the joy of playing the instrument in the music. Like knowing that you are a violinist, I think it shines through because there's a joy inherent in that music. I think as performers, we play music that is fun to play differently. Like it has a different sense of excitement.
Yeah, you are absolutely right.
Well, and I feel like, I don't know if this happened to you as you kept going through academia and studying more and more, but I feel like as I went through that process, there became more barriers, or I felt I had to change, or that I was all of a sudden put into writing music that didn't quite feel as natural. I was pushing myself, my teachers were pushing me, and that I didn't trust my natural instincts as much. And it just kind of, it was a painful process to go through that I feel like I had to kind of recover from. Did that happen to you at all?
Maybe we try to, if you try to switch the subject or the method a little bit once a while, that might help, because some of my works are very folk-like. You may see that from my former learning from the folk repertoire. But sometimes I would think, oh, maybe I would try something very abstract, right? And I would use like a golden section as the principle I follow to construct my some other works, which are much more abstract. And I mean, for my most abstract pieces, I would use a mathematic method to construct. Mm-hmm. And you can find that from folk music, from the technique, from folk music, also you could from mathematics, also you could from all different types of inspirations. So I may think that if you try that technique, that may help. Sometimes I did dictation from very folksy, like country Sean band music, which nobody had done transcription, and no scores you could find from those folk musicians. And then I did a dictation, and then I found out, oh, there is a structural a method they follow, although they are improvisational people. They don't read. Still, you can do some more research. I do a lot of research on ethnomusicology side, so that is also very helpful. I also would suggest to learn theory from other composers. Some references might be different techniques that we could introduce to students because they took different theory courses, but not everything would be used in their composition. Sometimes you need to remind them, or sometimes you would give them extra technique which they didn't know. Mm-hmm. So that is the composition teacher's job, I guess.
Yeah.
Besides discovering their own voice, we need to give a more technical input. And also, I guess we are very strict in standard requirement, like how to make notation professionally, how to sound out what you hear for notation. Yeah. And such. I thought that those are our work, our job.
Right. Well, I guess another way I'm thinking about it is that, you know, in graduate school, that little voice inside my head, you know, that's, you know, the inner critic, it just got a lot stronger during that time. And maybe that's part of the reason that you go to graduate school is to, because the more you know, you know, the more you realize you don't know, for one thing, but also you realize, wow, there are so many things I haven't thought of, and maybe I need to take in all these other things to make my work better or bigger or more proficient in whatever way. And I just found that that inner judge really, really took hold in school. And I think, and from other composers I've talked to, I've heard that that happens to them sometimes as well, too. Do you see that happening in your students?
Yeah, I think that to go to graduate school is a natural growing. It's a long time process. I consider that as a very natural process or result. Because when you go to graduate school, you have more courses required. I thought that it bloated your mind. You would find out more and more that you don't know would be discovered in the program, because the class of composers is a society, is a collective. It's not only one person.
You know, one of the things I really loved about talking to you is realizing how much you care about composition education and caring about all those students that you have in the program and all the different opportunities you give them. And that's just really wonderful. And thank you for doing that work. It's important, and these students, I hope they know how lucky they are.
We care them before they came and also after they graduate. Because they would follow you whole life. I still write letters for the people who I taught in Peabody.
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
They still need their teachers.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to sharing these works with the podcast listeners.
Wow. Oh, thank you, Jocelyn. Thank you.
After interviewing Chen Yi, I realized that one of the things I admire most about her is her dedication to her students. She focuses on the encouragement of young composers, just like my first composition teacher, Peter Hamlin, which is exactly as it should be. There will be years of anxiety and self-doubt to come, but in the beginning, young composers need to be encouraged. With every double bar line and performance, we learn something new. You can help emerging composers create opportunities to share their work. And if you have the capability, give them an excellent recording. For in many ways, this is key to their future success. And for all of you music teachers out there listening to this podcast, encouragement and support for their music is an incredible gift. Compose Like a Girl was produced by Justin Schell, Laura Kreider, and me, Jocelyn Hagen, with special help from fellow composers Erica Malpass and Addie Struckman. The Compose Like a Girl theme music was composed by cellist Cicely Parnas. Thanks also to Chanticleer Records and Albany Records for the use of Dr. Chen's music. You can learn more about Chen Yi and her music at her publisher's website, presser.com/Chen-Yi, and by following her on Facebook. Check out the links in our show notes, visit jocelynhagen.com/compose-like-a-girl, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram to listen to the music we talked about today. Learn more about the Compose Like a Girl initiative and check out past episodes. You can also find choral programming ideas by checking out the Compose Like a Girl choral series distributed through Graphite Publishing. To ensure that we can keep bringing these conversations to you, please consider joining our Compose Like a Girl Patreon page and giving what you can. Subscribe to the Compose Like a Girl podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're so moved, rate us on Apple Podcasts and share it with a few friends who you think will find inspiration. Until next time, trust your instincts. Be brave and unapologetic for your talents. Thanks for listening.